Welcome to the FS podcast hosted by Exadel. Exadel is the leading provider of digital transformation, managed services, and staff augmentation for the financial markets. Today, we're joined by Jonathan Nist, Chief Marketing Officer at Monese. Monese is a Belgian fintech focused around maximizing people's purchasing power. And Jonathan is also a marketing advisor at several early stage fintech and blockchain companies. So on this channel, you guys know we talk a lot about digital transformation and omni-channel. And before we started this call, when we were just catching up, Jonathan was telling me about an experience that he recently had with an unnamed traditional banking provider. Is there any chance you could tell our audience a little bit about your experience as well? Because I think it says a lot about the financial markets at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. So as I was saying, when I was 18, I got my first, real bank account with my own card and everything. And it was fine and well. And, I used that bank account for probably like, 10 years, 10 or 12 years. And then for a number of reasons, I switched, I got another bank, then I moved countries. And then, now I'm using a neo bank as my main bank account because, I think it's convenient, it's easy and everything. But what I realized is that suddenly I started getting papers in the mail with statements from that old bank account. And the first thing I realized is, I've been getting money on that bank account from a book that I have on Amazon. It's apparently been selling a little bit every now and then. And the second thing that I realized is that the bank started charging me €6 per month for my account for the last like 12 or 13 months. And so, I tried calling them up and asking to close the account, and it's not possible. I have to go physically to the branch where I opened up my account. That branch is not really, really far away from where I am, and so it's such a hassle, and like it's so hard, like mentally and physically, for me to like get myself to go there and then have a conversation with someone and close my account. And so, for the last like 12, 13 months, I've had €6 taken from my balance, and I haven't done anything about it. But it's just like how complicated it is to perform like such a simple action. That really, really triggers me. And so that's something that that I think is a very, telltale sign of one type of sort of mentality for some of the incumbent in financial services.
It's funny because, I mean, you're clearly very aware of your finances. You work in financial services. Someone who isn't could have been charged that and then not been aware, and then that could have gone into debt, and then they could be in debt and they could be charged interest on that debt again without knowing. And I think it's interesting to look at a situation like that and see how much of an impact financial education and financial literacy
Sure.
also has. Is there anything like, what do you think of micro investing platforms and kind of how financial services can provide financial education?
So there's, I think, a number of of topics. I think the role of a bank is obviously to be sort of a financial advisor, and so like that neo bank that I'm using, that's going to remain a name for now, but I took a subscription with, or like a trial, let's say with Audible, so just to listen to ebooks because I've never used it. And so the first month is free, and then afterwards they charge you whatever amount of dollars that they do. And what that neo bank did was sent me a push notification a few days before my trial ended, and saying, by the way, your trial period is almost over. This is how much you're going to be charged on Monday. Do you want to automatically block any payment to Audible, so you don't get charged for a month that maybe you don't want, or you were just trying it out and it didn't work out for you? And so like, this is for me an incredible example of like how a simple but well-designed and well-thought-out sort of UX trick can really help people like be more in touch with their finances. Like, I don't know about you, but I'll probably have 4, 5, 6 different subscriptions that I get charged like every month. I don't really, I know about it. I know I should cancel them, but it's like it's in the back of my mind. And so I get charged every month, and it's money that's basically not going anywhere, like not doing anything for me because I'm not using any of these services. And so, there's a number of like really small things that that financial service providers and banks in particular should be doing for the customers in order to help them with the finances that they're not doing. I think for me, what I realized when I was probably around 27 or 28 is that I was really, basically really bad with money. I didn't understand like some of the basic concepts around loans, around investments and all these things. And this is when I decided to start working for a bank. And so my first job and financial services was actually copywriting for a public bank in Belgium, and they were redoing the entire public website. And I thought, look, if I can, you know, write those basic product pages for everyday people like me, I'm going to understand these products like from, you know, like from a very, really, really like basic perspective. It's going to help me out so much. And actually it did. And I'm still shocked to say that I only really understood the power of like compound interest, for instance, when I was like well in my 30s. And for me, like this is crucial knowledge for people, you know, like it's like compound interest, investment, just like financial, like health in general. It's something that should be taught in schools. It's something that, you know, every teenager should be aware about. But instead of that, like, you know, we push like credit cards to youngsters like 18, 19, 20, and then they get one credit card and then another credit card and then third credit card to sort of like pay off the debts. And it's a never ending cycle. And so there's clearly, I think, a lot of work that needs to be done, not only by the education system, but by banks themselves in order to help customers really understand where money's going, how money can really work from them, you know, instead of just trying to, you know, charge you 6 euros per month for an account that you're not even using.
Sounds like you're a true content marketing pioneer.
Yeah. I was really lucky actually with the product because it was 2014. It was one big public website. It was also 20 satellite website based on really like specific personas for money moments in people's lives. It was like a whole content strategy. So I was really like, I was lucky to be part of that project and team because it really completely changed the way I thought about marketing, content marketing in general.
Obviously, you know, I love content marketing. We will get to a bit of content marketing in a bit. It's really interesting what you said because when I was 18, a suit like literally the second I turned 18, I got a letter in my mum's house about a really bad credit card, like with a really high rate and really bad. And they don't send you anything about, oh, you know, compound interest, this and that. They just send you here, take out debt immediately. If it wasn't for the fact that my mum hammered into my head, you know, wait for any debt or anything. And yeah, my neobank has roundups and pots, which I love and help me save. So from a traditional, let's look at what kind of banks can do. From a traditional bank's perspective, is there anything else that you can think of that about how banks can do better, in particular if they have smaller budgets, like community banks or maybe some credit unions? And what I do find interesting about this is that a lot of neobanks also have smaller budgets. So sometimes it can be a bit scary as a bank to think, oh, you know, we don't have the huge budget to provide these services. But I mean, you come from a neobank, so you've maybe, I don't know if you did have a smaller or a larger budget, but maybe you can tell us what banks can do.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that I started working or like advising on blockchain projects towards the end of 2020, and I saw what small teams were truly capable of in terms of, you know, in terms of building community, in terms of creating content and creating awareness and stuff like that. And it really blew me away because, you know, in my mind, like it was always about, oh, but then if we want to do content, we need to hire like one person full time, and then maybe hire an agency, and then we do need to do SEO analysis and stuff like that. And like these blockchain projects I work with, they were like so much more like down to earth and practical. It's just like we need to, you know, we just need to do this. We just need to like we're in Discord, we're on Telegram, we have all of our users, we talk to them on a daily basis. If we have a question, if we want to know what they want to know, we just have to like type one message into a channel and then we'll get like 1,000 answers. And so it was like the way they went on about creating content was completely new to me and like super inspiring. And so one thing that I think about now that I haven't really even gotten through a tryout or build is like building communities for financial services the same way that blockchain projects have been doing it. So, you know, like Discord channel, Telegram channel, and like having that one-on-one sort of relationship with your customers, being able to directly interact with them without ne always necessarily trying to push them a commercial message or a product or like, you know, a predatory sort of credit card. And that's one thing I really want to get to do at some point and just be in touch with the people that are using our services, understanding their core problems, and then giving them like simple answers in whatever form it is. And so in some projects that I work with, it was really nice. Like there was one, you know, one person that was super passionate about financial services. He was actually based in Kenya, hadn't studied like, finances or like financial anything. He just loved to write, and he got super passionate about the project and started banging out like financial education content, like, every other day. And it gave us a huge edge against, some similar projects or other projects, and the community was really engaged and really giving feedback in real time. And so I think that's one thing that like big banks and bigger financial institutions lose is really that ability to directly talk to the customers and get that instant feedback. So, it always sounds like, oh, you want to get feedback from your customers, then how are we going to organize like, customer surveys and like structured feedback? And like it seems like such a long and tedious process, whether if you focus on community building on channels like Telegram or Discord, you have instant access to people who could potentially be, your best advocates and your best sort of inspirations for content topics.
Really interesting. That agility is really a benefit for smaller banks. It's interesting that you mentioned that because I think about a year and a half ago, I did a article on TikTok, and I was looking for the article to see which banks or traditional banks were actually on TikTok. And as far as I could find at the time, this was almost 2 years ago, pretty much none of the big traditional banks were on there, but a very small few community banks and small, 30, 40, 50 people banks actually were on there. What's your kind of thoughts around TikTok and what banks can do with TikTok?
I mean, I'm a huge fan of TikTok for a number of reasons. I think, as opposed to like other channels like Instagram, where it feels like you need to hire a professional photographer and like have a really beautiful feed and everything needs to be curated and like beautiful copywriting. Like you can be more like raw on TikTok. It's just, you and your camera, and you put a face on your brand, where your viewers are going to be able to relate a little more easily with your brand and who you are and what you stand for, which is great. But obviously, I think from a purely data perspective, like the good thing is that you don't need a big following on TikTok in order to for your videos to be viewed, because the algorithm doesn't work like that. So that's one thing. And the second thing is that because of the format and because of the audience, like there's huge untapped opportunities for big financial services and like or financial services in general on TikTok to really connect with an audience. And we know that the audience is generally a little younger on TikTok, even though it's changing. There's more and more people my age on TikTok, but like the people who are between 18 and 22, these people are going to be like, prime candidates for all types of financial services in the next 5 to 10 years. And we know that by 2027, 2028, 2030 at the latest, these people, like this demographic, is gonna be the one with the highest purchasing power. And so, just like as I was talking earlier, we're like getting a bank account at 18 and how long I stuck with it, just because it was my first one. I think that's where the big opportunity lies for financial services. Like be in front of these people's eyes now, and you could get customers that are going to stay with you for the next 10 to 15 years if you're lucky, if you're doing things well.
So we've spoken a bit about fintech and neobanks. I know you work with blockchain and crypto companies as well. Do you think TikTok's an opportunity for them too?
100%, and I think in some parts of the world it's already the case. I think if you look at Asia, where I was based for 6 years, every type of company you can find them on TikTok, whether it's real estate, whether it's obviously e-commerce, but also financial services, insurances, and stuff like that. So there's a bit, I think, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a bit of a mental block in Europe and maybe in the US around TikTok. It's like, oh, but I thought TikTok was like dance challenges and stuff like that, but it's so much more than that. And Asia is much more forward thinking when it comes to creating content on TikTok. And so it's already being done, and blueprints are basically there already. You don't need to invent anything. You just need to like take inspirations from maybe different parts of the world, see how people are using it to relate to the customers and create engagement, and work on their branding without always pushing a product to be sold, and take the blueprint, experiment with it in Europe or wherever you are, and 100% convinced that with consistency you can be successful.
Funny that you mentioned countries, actually. So we work with quite a few different regions. But yeah, I would definitely say if you take it back to neobanks, I've seen the kind of neobank adoption in Europe and South America and Asia to be a bit quicker, maybe, than I would say in North America. Like I remember a few years ago, I was in Canada and I had my neobank card and we went into this shop and there was like loads of young people and they were like, oh my God, like that card's so cool. And they were getting really excited about the color of the card. And it's like, it's such like a small thing that the color, and they were like, no, we don't have anything here in Canada that's the color of that card and we would love some different colors. And I'm like, oh, like there's just such an opportunity for a bank somewhere in Canada to just release a card that's a different color. And I feel like, yeah, sometimes there's a disconnect with the social media and some other things that younger generations like.
No, for sure, for sure. And I think, I mean, obviously, like with everything you said, I think I know which neobank you're talking about. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that also, you know, people tend to think of branding as like these big campaigns and big ads and like, you know, you got to put emotions and stuff like that. But branding can be as easy and as subtle, just having like a color that stands out. And then, you know, and you're in the line to pay the cashier, you see someone flash a card, and just because you see the color, you don't even see the logo or anything, you know which brand it is. That's, you know, these are like all the small things that can really, really pay off.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think there are, or what kind of use cases do you think there are for blockchain for traditional banks? So how can traditional banks, maybe including credit unions and community banks, get involved in the kind of blockchain, crypto, digital asset
I
world?
think for me, the sort of lowest hanging fruit is obviously international remittance, sending money abroad or to a different country. Like, do it through your bank, and it's, you know, it's tedious and it costs a lot of money, lacks transparency. Thankfully, there's like alternatives nowadays, you know, to that path. But like, anyone who sent money from one wallet to the other, like, and saw how quick it is and how little fees you can pay, understands that the ability to move money globally with a fully transparent system, in the sense that you can understand, like, and anybody can see who sent money where and for what, like, has a number of applications, whether it's for like foreign workers sending money back to their family, or even when it's for, let's say, you know, charities or a fund that are being dispatched or disbursed to a number of organizations. You can really check the money, see, understand how much money was given to the charity, what they've done with it. There's a really big lack of transparency for, you know, like on a number of topics that blockchain really helps to solve. So I think, you know, yeah, foreign workers and charity money disbursement, transparency are basically the two biggest applications I can think of right now.
Interesting actually as well, because on that there's, you know, the kind of B2C consumer, but then there's also high, like ultra high net worth consumers or high net worth consumers who also want to transfer money, or you know, companies sometimes, and the money that they're transferring is millions and millions, and a small part of that is, you know, a good fee, but sometimes they genuinely, I've heard that they sometimes genuinely can't actually transfer the money. Like it's like, oh no, this is too much money, you can't transfer this.
Yeah,
It's like, but
exactly.
it's my money. So yeah, it targets quite a few areas. So we know each other from LinkedIn, and I've obviously followed your LinkedIn quite a lot. So you do quite a lot of personal branding. How successful have you found personal branding for kind of B2B work within the financial services?
For me, personal branding on LinkedIn really started out with, you know, as an outlet for creativity. Like, you know, I really missed being able to write about stuff, which I don't do as much in my day-to-day job, but and I really miss it. So I thought, you know, might as well give me this constraint of trying to write everything on LinkedIn. So in the beginning, it was on the on a wide variety of topics, and then I've kind of narrowed down to more leadership, and I think especially showing vulnerability as a key leadership trait, which, you know, isn't necessarily a big given in big organization or like more traditional organization. But for B2B networking, it's really funny because obviously I think anyone on LinkedIn in any sort of position get, you know, we all get a number of cold emails or like cold messages from people trying to sell stuff, right? And 99% of the time I never answer. Like, you know, it's just, yeah, it's catching me at the wrong time or bad time and stuff like that. So the only two companies I've ever contacted, like, or people I've ever contacted or replied to, is because that is because the company they were working for was creating content that was actually super useful for me on a personal and professional level. And it wasn't commercial content. It was just like they were just, you know, like openly sharing knowledge about like how it's working for them, how they're structuring the marketing team, how they're thinking about targets and mission and like and objectives and all these things. And because it, you know, got me so like what we were saying, I implemented a fair few things and you know, in my work and my daily life. And obviously when it came, like when I had the decision to make to take a supplier or like find a supplier or a contractor for a number of things, that like they were top of mind. So it was, you know, it was super easy sell. And I think that's, you know, one big key thing for me is that I see a lot of companies creating content, and even though they try to create like that, you know, content's useful, at the end there's always like a call to action to say, oh, by the way, like, you know, if you want to buy this, like just click on this. And not enough companies providing generally useful information for the target personas that they have. So if you're doing or using LinkedIn as a platform for B2B networking or anything, like just think about providing value or adding real value and having a real conversation before you start selling anything. I don't know if, you know, that's something that you can relate to or you have experience with, but yeah.
I've seen from kind of doing marketing that multi-touch can work. So where you have good content and then you also have kind of retargeting campaigns and you also have outreach and you do a mixture of all of those kind of things. You said that you talk a lot about leadership and being vulnerable. Are there any tips that you can provide to our listeners?
So I'm actually following a complete manager course right now, which is with a Section 4. Sorry, I'm plugging it, but it's an education platform that's done by Scott Galloway. And one of the exercises that they had us do was create this operating manual for yourself. And so asking yourself a number of questions, I actually have them here. There's like six questions that you can try to answer, and then you can sort of share this with, you know, people in your company or with your team, and it helps them understand like who you are as a person and relate to you and like potentially, you know, develop trust and everything. And so the six questions are: what do people get right about you? What do people underappreciate or underestimate about you? What are three essential things about you? In good relationships, what did you do or not do? In frustrating relationships, what did you do or not do? In stress relationship times, what pushed your buttons? Which patterns of yours irritated yours? And so, you know, I've been taking a lot of time to just like think about these questions, trying to craft an answer. Then, you know, like I forget about it for a couple hours. I come back and try to craft a different answer. I run it through my wife, who knows me better than anyone else in the world, to see if, you know, whatever I had written was like actually accurate, or if I was being delusional with my the perception of who I am. And I find it really like really interesting and really useful, because, you know, it's self-awareness, it's self-reflection, and then being able to share this is also an act of vulnerability, because there are some things like in the answers that, you know, are not necessarily like considered strictly professional. But then be like, I'm really looking forward to share all these things to with my team, get their input, and potentially get them to do the same. So, you know, we can all get to know each other on a deeper level rather than just the surface sort of like, you know, water fountain conversation that you can have in the office.
That's really interesting. I'll be having a think about those as well later. And thank you for sharing them with us. You mentioned your team. How have you kind of fostered and built a strong middle management?
For me, you know, the thing when especially when you get into a new team, it's super easy to tend to want to be involved in all of the decisions at first and try and control and like, you know, make sure that people think like you or are gonna make decisions the way you would have made them. And so that's something I really want to avoid. And so for instance, one question that I ask in every one-on-one that I have, and I try to have one-on-one with, you know, 25 minutes one-on-one every week with people in the middle management, where we don't necessarily talk about tasks unless there's something that they block with or they need feedback on that they can help that I can help push forward. But the last question I always ask is like, do you have any feedback for me? And it could be feedback like on a specific situation that happened, on an email that I sent, like, or we were in a team meeting, I said something happened, I didn't react, or I reacted in a certain way. And I think at first when you ask the question, people are like a little bit no, not really, like, it takes them a little bit by surprise. And but then as you build that habit of asking them every week, they start making mental notes or like of things that happen, and they give you that feedback, and as time goes by, like that feedback gets even more honest. So there's less sugarcoating, there's more honesty. And so over time, I think being able to build that trust and understanding that this is a relationship that goes both ways, where I'm trying to help them, level up or like become better and make more decisions than for themselves rather than asking me for input. I think showing that I want their feedback, and I don't have all the answers, and sometimes I make mistakes. Is probably the singlest thing. Is that just something you say, or like the most important thing that I've done in managing people in the last year or so?
Thank you so much. So, last question, if anyone would like to connect with you or hear more about what you do or more on your thoughts, where can they find you?
LinkedIn is the place where I spend the most time, and I reply the most to messages and comments and everything. So yeah, find me on
Great.
LinkedIn.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was the FS podcast hosted by Exadel. Don't forget to follow us to hear more.